welcome to another Book on the Shelf podcast. I'm Jess.
And I'm Jen.
And it is a spooky season.
Yes, our favorite season.
Yes, we wait all year.
So we are somehow on episode 106, officially into season four. But for spooky season, and also for our like sort of graphic novel book club that we haven't officially done, but we keep doing because we just keep reading graphic novels.
Because we like the graphic novels, yeah.
Yeah. We're diving into spooky season, and we have a guest on the pod today!
Yay!
Hello!
Yes. Please welcome Mike Story. He is absolutely friend of the pod. We know him in our real lives, but spooky graphic novels are his jam. Hi!
Sweet. Hello! How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Thanks for always
joining us.
I'm an avid listener. I usually listen in the car and I get all giddy because I have gotten a couple of shout outs. So.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on. This is awesome.
So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and why we would ask you to be on such a specific episode?
Okay. I'm a huge horror fan. I have a branding called Horror Mooners, and I created it a couple of years ago with my wife Lisa, and it was to create a couple of joint projects and to just use a branding horror specific. And it's now kind of evolved and it's being kind of rebranded. It's specifically now run by me. It still serves as like stuff we do together, but I kind of wanted to expand it into doing projects with other people to bring in other people who want to work on horror stuff. Specific projects or comics or even audio. So, but I definitely would like to grow it. But yeah.
And in addition to your love of horror, you are also an artist.
Yes, and writer and project enthusiast. And yeah.
So anyone who's listened somewhat recently when I talk about the like graphic novel short story collection thing that I'm working on, Mike is the one that I am working on it with.
Yay.
So I know a few months ago I was like, okay, we're gonna do this, and right away you were like, oh my god, yes. And then yes. You sent me a list of things. I also did some like, you know, googlings and whatnots of horror graphic novels.
Sorry, a dog barking on.
That's okay. There was a dog barking it's outside my window too. Yeah.
Okay. It's we the hounds have of a hell. Podcast. So, we got the.
Yeah.
So I had actually like gone through, and I think, I don't know, I've lost count now. I'm at about 15 horror graphic novels so far for spooky season.
Wow.
But this was one that you had recommended, and I have actually also read something else by one of the authors. So that's why we picked this one. So we're going to talk about Something is Killing the Children. I've never heard these people's names out loud, so this is my butchered version of the authors. If anyone has heard them out loud, feel free to correct. In my head, it's James Tinian IV. It could be Tinian. I don't know. He's the writer. Werther Del Adera is the artist. And Mikhail Muerto, I believe, does the coloring and such. So that's what we're talking about.
I being the comic guy, I wish I could correct you, but I probably I butcher the names as well. I really like that the main three credits on this. I really like the colorist got a big credit. Usually it's the writer and the artist, and usually the colorist isn't featured as well. Yeah. And I was really impressed by that in the credits for this book.
Jen, do you want to give us a little blurb about everybody?
Yeah, sure. So James Tinian IV is a comic book writer. He's best known as the writer for the comic flagship series Batman. And in addition to the 2017 GLAAD award-winning series The Woods with Michael D'Alenis?
That sounds perfect to me.
Amazing. And he also penned the critical successes Mimetic, Cognetic, and Eugenic. Well, it was weird to say those three words right after one another. I don't know why. Eric Donovan, the Backstagers with Ryan Singh and UFOlogy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm doing real well here, guys.
No, it's good.
He's an alumni of Sarah Lawrence College and now lives and works in New York, New York. Were there Deledera? Is that what we were saying? Deledera?
Yeah.
Deledera. Yeah. Is an Italian artist. He was born in the south of Italy and worked for some of the biggest publishers in both Italy and the U.S. with his works ranging from Loveless for under DC Vertigo to the graphic novel Spider-Man Family Business, obviously Marvel. He's also worked for Image Comics, IWD, Dynamite, and Dark Horse. So he's like all over. That's awesome. Yeah. And he's drawn Sergio Bonelli's Dylan Dog and the Crow.
Ooh.
I don't know any of these, but it Dylan sounds
Dog
very cool.
is a cool book.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes, and then I like that it's not dead, Mikel Muerto, because his last name is. But he's lived in Barcelona since 1992, where he studied illustration, ran a small press, and worked as a graphic designer until he decided to chase his dream doing comics. So that's a really cool, actually, career trajectory for him. The Druid's Path was his comic book debut as a full artist. A traumatic experience he swore would never happen again. I love when people's bios get really fun. So yes, now he's coloring comics and has been happily following that path ever since. So those are our three main credits on this work, which I loved so much. I just like, we were like, we're gonna definitely do volume one, and then I got all the way to the end of volume three. So
nice. I finished volume two, and then I was like, oh, do I do volume three as well? But didn't quite yet.
Yes, because it wrapped it up so nicely.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely.
I was like, oh, that was a perfect place to stop.
Yeah. I definitely wanted to read more. I didn't have time. I'm going to. I think I'm probably going to read everything that there is for it. Yeah. So, yeah. Speaking of the colors, though, like, it's a beautifully colored book. I love. Mm-hmm.
We're definitely going to dive into all that in like hot second.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so Something is Killing the Children. The sort of like blurb for it is, when the children of Arthur's Peak begin to go missing, everything seems hopeless. Most children never return, but the ones that do have terrible stories, impossible stories of terrifying creatures that live in the shadows. Their only hope of finding and eliminating a threat is the arrival of a mysterious stranger, one who believes the children and claims to see what they can see. Her name is Erica Slaughter. She kills monsters. That is all she does. And she bears the cost because it must be done.
I mean, I'm always here for hunting monsters, so.
Yeah. So good. So, I don't know. Let's just dive in. What did we think? What are we... I always forget how we do a podcast. How do we do this? Let's talk.
I know.
I love this. I thought it was awesome. It was a really cool mix of a bunch of different genres. It looks almost cute, and then it gets like really disturbing.
Yeah.
Like, especially all these like children being ripped apart was kind of
It's gory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unsettling, I think, is a good.
They talk about, you know, just like, oh, like, well, they're just eating the babies and ripping the parts apart. And you're like, okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the scene? I think the first time I noticed while I was reading, how unsettling when you get introduced to Erica and she has that little girl in the wagon and she's missing her legs and she's got an arm missing. And you're like, oh, wow, they're going to go there. And then you think it just takes that further and further as it goes along.
One, because it doesn't really like acknowledge that, like, it's just she just happens to be with this girl, they're friends, whatever, and then she like goes off to like save these zones, and you're like, wait, but what was that about?
I found the buildup was nice too, because you don't really know at first. I thought, is Erica like not human? And I know they touch on that. I think you're not supposed to know yet, but then they have little lead-offs where it's like, okay, well, she's got that weird mark on the side of her head. Is that a scar or is that something different? Or it was really neat.
And certainly in the second volume, it alludes more to, at the very least, the group that she is with or sort of trained with. as a monster hunter.
And then there's the inner politics of that secret society and like how like, I thought that was neat.
Yeah, me too. I like the way the complexity of it built on, like it builds very nicely, like you said.
So a lot of these collections I find, they start off really well. And then there's a book, I think it's by Tim Seeley. I hope I'm not getting this wrong. It's called Revival. And it starts off amazing. And then it's almost like they didn't prepare for it to be an ongoing series. And then usually you get two or three trades in. And then you start to lose interest just because it goes off the rails. They never plan to take it further. Whereas this one, I feel like even the second, like at the end of the second trade, I just feel like it's going to a good place or it was planned properly.
I still am like, ooh, what's going to happen next?
Like, like a strong story structure. So,
because I think there's four full trades already collected, and then maybe like a couple issues after. Already out.
But yeah, there's like on Hoopla. There was a volume 5 that I saw, but I couldn't find volume 4, which was weird.
That's what I read.
I think 4 is maybe new because I remember the Sidekick, one of our favorite comic book stores in Toronto, because of spooky season, they had a post and they definitely had like 4.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so I'm wondering if 5 is like coming maybe.
Did you?
I mean, I know that 5 wasn't on Hoopla last week when I was looking.
Yeah.
So that seems like a new addition, but I've definitely maxed out all of my Hoopla because I just started getting the individual issues because they have all the issues all the way through, I think, 25. And I was like, oh, right, I can only do 8 of these at 8 per month. So I've maxed that out now.
And Mike, you might actually get 12 because you have a Suburban library card.
Oh, I do. I do.
Because Katie's is, I think she has Oshawa and Whippy, and she gets 12 with one of them. But then I think because we're actually in Toronto, we only get 8.
Oh, that's no good.
I know.
Can I ask, what mode do you guys view the comic in? Because I know there's that mode where if you double click the screen and it like it moves the comic forward for you. So it zooms in.
I did know about that because when I downloaded it first, it was explaining that to me and I didn't bother trying because I wasn't sure like what to do with it. I was like, this is fine. I'll just read it like this.
Well,
and I like kind of seeing it at like all at once.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So it's funny because when I read, when I read like an actual physical comic book, I like the experience of panel to panel and how the artwork is usually designed to guide your eye from top left right to bottom right. And that's a lot of good artists will incorporate that. And it's a lot of people wouldn't probably, or especially into the art form, wouldn't like that mode, but I really like it digitally. I actually enjoy it. It's a whole different reading experience, right? And my eyesight's terrible, so.
I don't think that ever popped up for me. Like mine, I get the full page, and then when it's meant to be a double page, it goes smaller. So then if I just rotate, then I get them both pages, but like
that's full. Exactly what I do with my iPad. It shifts from portrait to landscape, depending on if we're looking at a single page or a double page.
Next time you're reading, try just double click one of the panels with your finger. Because you read it on an iPad, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and it'll automatically go into that mode for you. Yeah.
Intrigue. it's like volume 5 just came out. So I think that might be why.
Sweet.
So yeah, I am seeing the collected volume 5, but it literally came out like last week. So
I'm excited.
All right. Okay, so we are actually talking with an artist and whatnot. Let's dive into the artwork and stuff. What do we think? What do we like? What do we not like? I liked it all.
Sorry. Yeah, I think it's a beautiful book. I like I like any scene where there's like the monsters are eviscerating children. It's usually this nice like blue palette of like cool colors. Mm-hmm. And then I love the like warm colors that they bring in just for the violence. So just the blood and the gore has that like, I say beautiful, it kind of, it's this great contrast, and it just I find it like emotionally, it's just beautiful art. That's why I'm glad that the colorist got a lot of credit, or
yeah,
at least yeah.
Well, because all the scenes where it's just like actually like Erica or the other, like, you know, the sheriff or the parents or whatever, it's much more muted. You're not getting the reds, you're not getting blues, purples, mm-hmm. whatever. But then yeah, then you get that. So as soon as you see something where you get even like blue of any kind, really, mm-hmm. or like a red or a purple, then you're like, oh, okay, this is something. Like
you start to get into that. Something's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the palette becomes more. There's more like varied colors where it's like you're just paying interest to what's going on with the characters, and as soon as that you see just that like wash over of cool colors, you're like, uh oh, like we're gonna get some warmth in here.
the background, so like the panels, you know how there's always like the little space and it's like white in between on those pages, it's black, so it just like makes it even darker.
I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice that either. Jet's always noticing little things like that where I'm like, what? I didn't even notice this.
Well, because I think then that like, right, like it creates again, like it makes it even more because the entire page now is dark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you know, like when
it's like someone flips the lights out.
Yeah. So like in that first volume, when they're in the cave and like Erica's like, you know, killing the mob mm-hmm. monster. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it's all black. So then it all just stands out and gets spookier.
What did you guys think of the characters?
I do not, and I mean, you know, much to, I'm sure, your wife's chagrin from just what she likes and her when her birthday is, I do not like dressing up. I will not dress up. I do not do dress up parties. I do not do Halloween parties. But if I ever did, as soon as I started reading this, I was like, oh, I want to dress up like Erica Slaughter.
Oh my God, me too. I was like, I want to be this girl. Like, this is so fun.
It's total doable costume. I mean, right? I think yeah, I've like, seen those space skirts before.
Yeah. But yeah, she's super badass. And I feel like we still, and again, like I've read one and two, right? So like we still don't actually know her. Like we got a little bit into more of her background and but we still don't know much. But like, yeah, she just seems so cool and such a badass. And like when you're reading something or watching something, like it's that character that you can attach yourself to, kind of like she's trying to save them, so you're like, yeah, cool. But then also you're like, wait, what happened to you?
I really liked James. I found that I liked his character was kind of brought in where you can tell Erica's been doing this and she's kind of detaching herself, and he kind of is like this force that kind of guides her back into, like, because it's very themed the first two trades about her caring more, like there's this society that she works for. And then there's her, and then like it's a very like lone life. She can't be part of regular society, but she's not really accepted by the secret society she's in. And I find he grounds her and just really makes her feel sympathetic towards people. He's a very sympathetic character, and I found that they wrote him doing grief really well.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
I don't know if you agree.
No, I do. I definitely do agree with that. No, I do. Yeah, I even thought Tommy was an interesting character too, just in like in the way that he's complex, where he's the character that's doing things that you're like, you are causing more problems.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, like his sister has disappeared and been eviscerated by this monster. Mm. So like he's also a sympathetic character in that way, where like you understand where all of like why he's doing everything that he's doing.
Yeah.
Even though he's making things harder for.
He brings in that like society viewpoint of like satanic panic. I don't know if you ever heard that term before. Yeah. Yeah. And totally like the, like his friend kind of pumping him up like, well, you know, that girl knows this. And it was interesting, and yeah, it was really neat. I like that part.
Mm-hmm. What did either of you think of like the, because what is it? There's the coroner whose brother is the sheriff, or they're, I don't know, they know each other somehow. And then like the principal, like there's those few extra ones who like, I mean, it's very classic small town, like the sheriff, you have to like figure this out. But he's like, I don't know how to figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah. He was neat because it's like same thing. Almost he's a character I found that was kind of similar to James. He's like very grounding. He's very like you're getting in this outside viewpoint of he's like we didn't see the conversation he had with the society, but he obviously knows it's serious. He knows he has no choice, and it's him dealing with the grief of having to deal with the people in his town at the same time, knowing that he really can't, he's got to do exactly what they say.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
What about the octopus, the stuffed octopus? I loved that component.
Yeah, that was like, go you go.
Welcome to every episode ever. No, you go. Because at first, because he's kind of cute and he kind of has that like, clearly, you know, she's had him since she was little, so he's kind of raggedy, whatever. But then it's only in the second one that you find out that like, there's something inside him. Because like, we kind of knew that there was something, but we didn't necessarily know that like, it was just pure.
So spoilers, can we reveal, or do you want to not give that much information out? Or
we always give spoilers.
If we do. There's a blanket spoiler for every episode.
was I wrong when it was described as because at first you see she's got this like hate for this stuffed animal that she talks to and carries around, and you find out later that when she was a kid something traumatic happened to her, and this used to be her favorite stuffed animal, and now the creature that killed her family in front of her is trapped inside of it, and she needs it to do her job to like monster hunt because it's trapped there. It kind of like helps her, but she's having
because in that way then she knows that it's not out, so that
killing
other things.
It's brutal, like just
and just like, you know, maybe a little bit of a heavy-handed metaphor, but I like it. The idea that like, this is just always with her, like both physically and mentally, like that is driving everything she does. And it's, there's just this physical manifestation of it that she constantly has with her.
Yeah. Again, the writing was great for this.
Yeah.
What do we think about the secret society?
They're shady.
I like that they're like rich, like hoity-toity, like they're very they're obviously come from money, and they're it's kind of like there's a lot of metaphors to like real life. Is like they're on this level where they control things, but they don't really want to get their hands dirty, and when they do have to get involved, they usually end up screwing it up. When they actually, that's what Erica's for. She's like the middleman, right?
Well, and then I don't remember if this goes more into volume 3 or I read volume 2 and volume 3 back to back, and I'm not sure where the cutoff point was between them. But like, she ends up talking about how they're more concerned with keeping their cover story in place so that nobody finds out there's monsters than they are with actually saving lives from the monsters.
Yeah, that's in volume 2. Okay. She talks with Aaron and she's like, oh yeah, great. You're just worried about the cover up. Like, I'm trying to save children.
Which I think again goes into that idea of this sort of like rich organization that is running things, that is more concerned with optics than it is about real world impact on people.
Despite just saying that we're all about spoilers without maybe not spoiling it for us, do we learn more about the secret society in volume 3?
I mean, not a ton more.
Okay. Do we learn how Erica ends up with them? Because we know that like some other lady comes up when the thing is killing her family, but at that point she's already like half killed the thing. So like clearly Erica has her own like situation going on.
Yeah. So we don't find out much more. I think that because the end of volume 3 kind of wraps up this story, I think the next volume, like the volumes after that, go into her backstory. Okay. And like, I think like that's her origin story.
Because I feel like I definitely want to know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's getting to that point. You're like, okay, let's get some more background stuff on Erica.
Yeah. It's all just teasers for what's to come.
What do we think about just the structure in general? So we have, there's like a little bit of like flashbacks. There's a little bit of, you know, different viewpoints. Just the story in general. What are we thinking?
I mean, it's strong. It's great. It's hard to elaborate on it. It, it, Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
That's okay. That's how we
this
know
is what happens whenever we enjoy something a lot. Yeah. We're like, I don't know. It was just great.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking too hard about it. Yeah.
No, I really liked the way you got a little bit more, like, what am I trying to say here? The way that you find out more how it all started, like those little flashbacks to the kids going into the woods, I thought that was done really well, because you're sort of thrust into it right away and not really sure what's going on. And then you get to build on it to get more of the details of how that all came about. And I thought that was really effective.
There's definitely cinematography in thought of in storytelling, when he is being interviewed at the police station, when James, you see him crying, but like from a worm's eye view, and you see the tears are like really big. And I saw that a couple of times, and it's the lighting switching between the memory. It's really nice contrast. I think some of the best comic artists really use a lot of like Hitchcock elements in their storytelling and other like film. They're definitely thinking film. And how to apply that with sequential storytelling, like panel to panel. It's neat. You can get pretty creative artistically with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I could definitely see that, because as I was reading it, I was like, I want somebody to adapt this for something on a screen, because I think it would play really well that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone would be like super on board with like showing eviscerated children on a screen, but
maybe that's why it's not like so mainstream yet, or especially. And even though like how shocking or how it's like, wow, that's it's going there. I think the scene that shocked me is when everybody's waiting, because at the one point where all the kids, they didn't have enough room at the morgue to like try to sort out the pieces of children. So they had to use the school gymnasium, and they have all the parents waiting in the parking lot in alphabetical order to be called in to say their goodbyes. And they have kids with them. And then the one monster comes out, just lifts this little girl in the air and like rips her apart in front of everybody. And you're like, oh my God, like really?
Yeah. Well, because the adults can't see the monsters, you just see like the girl floating and then this like snapped in half. And you're like,
yeah.
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 What's the name of the society? Is there a name for them? The society that Erica works for?
The House of Slaughter.
They're like the House of Slaughter, but like they're the Order of St. George or something.
St. George. Mm.
Yeah. But it's funny how they don't really care about that. They're just like, well, you screwed up because this wasn't supposed to happen, because it's your job to, you know, you got this far. This is your mess up. Clean it up.
So. Yeah, they're like, this is on social media now. We need to fix this.
Speaking of like the graphic stuff, so because at this point I have read like a whole bunch just like all in a row, that was one of the interesting things and why I kind of saved this one too, because I wanted to like sort of get some under my belt, and like where some the story was kind of the equivalent of like, this is kind of creepy and weird and spooky and like I don't know, but then others just like there's in Harrow Country, there's like, I think we talked about this in the last one too, like it's a being, but it's really just a skin suit. And like the girl's like carrying it around like in her purse, and like the skin suit is like talking. Or it's actually in Carmen Maria Machado's The Lolo Woods, there's just like skinless men. So like I didn't find this one like the physical actual looking at the artwork as, whereas like, yes, the actual story of it, that girl being ripped in half, the cave where like they're all just piles of dead children parts, whatever. It was
that was brutal.
It's like so many other like horror anything, right? Where like they were giving us enough without necessarily completely showing.
Yeah,
everything was like in some of the other ones, like it was showing it, and I was like, oh, turn the page.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it was also just trying to like shock you. I found that the violence was necessary in the storytelling. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like, oh, look how gross we can get. I've read some of those, but this was definitely, no, this is story driven. It was.
And I think that's why I liked it, because I do like this much like kind of scary horror, creepy thriller, whatever, but like I don't need to just see like
Yeah.
10 baby arms or whatever, you know. Like.
Right. But yeah, no, in this case, I do think you need that, like, the amount that they gave you because, you know, you have James who's seen his friends ripped apart and you have the little girl that they rescue from the cave who's just been there that whole time. So, like, you have to sort of show a little bit of the trauma that these kids have seen and experienced in order to, like, get the reader in on that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
you have to send me some of the links to some of these. Like, I think you've already read more horror graphic novels than I have.
I did. That's what happened in September. I ran out of my hoopla. That's how I found out that there was a hoopla limit.
I have some good ones. I don't know if you want to read all of them. there's a series or. Did You Hear What Eddie Gein Done is probably one of the best graphic novels I've read in a while. It's kind of the same. It's almost the same idea as the Dahmer series on Netflix about the serial killer Ed Gein. But I like that it's not just about senseless, you know, that it's a part of showing the victims but it's a fictional story based on all the information that and theories on like his relationship with his mom and it, what balances out. It was really good. Really good.
Cool. Yeah. Nice. Definitely in for more. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Have you read anything else by this author, James Tynion the Fourth?
No. No, which is I'm definitely gonna look.
Well, because I know on one of the other episodes we talked about The Nice House on the Lake. Which I'd read before I realized that, because you had said something about like, oh, something is killing the children. I was like, cool. Before I realized it was the same author. Mm. But The Nice House on the Lake, the first trade just came out this year. I don't even know if any of the next issues are even out, but it was one of those where like I finished it and it ends just completely like with nothing resolved. And then I was like, what? And like the next collection comes out in like March. And I was like, son of a mother.
That's the problem with trades, because they start off as comic issues first, then they become trades. And if you jump on late, it's great because you get a whole bunch of content. But if it's like if you're like fairly read it, and then it's a lot longer than waiting for an episode or even like a sequel to a movie come out sometimes.
Well, because at that point, like I had this huge list of some of the ones you were recommended, some of the ones I found, and most of them were like contained, or at least you know that. The amount in the trade like was contained, and then like if you wanted to read the next volume you could, like it was slightly, but then this one, yeah, it was definitely just like I was so in it and so hooked, and because there's always the artwork at the end, the extra artwork, so you're like, oh no, wait, I still have 30 pages, but then you don't, and I was just like... But that was why then when I realized that this was also James Tynion the Fourth, I was like, oh, I definitely want to read this because like I really really like that story. But I don't know, I think it was, I can't remember who the rest of the creators were, but I'm sold for him. Although I keep seeing what is that other one that he did, the Woods? I keep seeing that one, but I haven't looked into it yet. I think that one's fairly well known, actually.
One author you have to look up, especially if you like graphic novels, in my opinion, I think he's the best modern day comics writer is Garth Ennis. He ranges everything. He does really creepy horror, but he can delve into a genre and do a bunch of different subgenres within that genre, and he writes them all very well. So I've seen him do, like, he does a series called Cross, and it's like it's torture porn pretty much. But I've also seen him do a horror book that's like, but it's kind of similar to this one. And I've seen him do World War II books, and like he's the spectrum that he goes, it's insane. His writing is incredible. So if you ever check out Garth Ennis, and he has tons of content, it's endless.
Amazing. Do we have any other thoughts, feelings, things that we want to talk about in regards to Something is Killing the Children?
I'm good.
I'm good. Yeah. Excited to read great. More.
Yes. Yes. Tonight. I think volume 3 is going to get read tonight.
I know, right?
Nice.
It's okay. We're almost to the end of October. My hoopla will renew soon. I have a couple more. I can go. I can still read.
Yeah. Is that how they do it? Do they wait? Like it's like per month. So
yeah. So it's literally not like
tracking like your own version of a month. Mm. I start, if I took something, it's just like in October.
It's October.
And then it renews.
Mm. Excellent. Yeah.
So close.
Well, you know, cause I tried, cause then I was like, wait, if I return them, like, cause I hadn't returned all of them.
I know, so I was kind of hoping that too.
It has nothing to do with returning. It has to do with the physical borrowing. So November 1st, you can dive back in.
Excellent.
Although my trick to that is also Libby. A lot of these will also be on Libby. So if that's how I was anyway, when I was reading all of them, I was like, I need more. I went to Libby until my hoopla came back. Now, one question we always ask is, would you recommend this? But then like sometimes that also falls under like, to everyone, to who, to how, like what kind of thing. So Jen, would you recommend this?
I would for people who like this kind of thing. Like yeah. I'd be like a caveat of like, there are a lot of dead children in this. So if that's something that's going to bother you, definitely don't read it. Like I have some friends who have kids that like would probably enjoy something like this, except for the dead kid aspect. Mm. Like I think that would be too much for them. So I would say maybe stay away from that. But no, I would, for anyone who enjoys graphic novels and horror, I think it's, yeah, I really liked it.
I would definitely recommend it, which I have. Yep. And I feel the same about that. I think if you like good storytelling, definitely I would keep in mind that it gets a little violent, but I feel like it's necessary.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Yeah, definitely. Now I'm just like, oh, more. I want more.
Yeah.
Since it is spooky season, and we know that I've talked about a bunch of other ones, and I think on a few other episodes I talked about some of the other ones that I've read. Aside from this, Mike, do you have any other horror spooky recommendations?
Definitely the one I mentioned with... did you hear what Eddie Gein done? I would check out, I think it's another Tim Seeley book. Wow, and I'm actually blanking on it. okay, never mind that one. Hackslash. It's a great series. It's very like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, if you like that kind of stuff. It's like fun and yeah. Those are some definitely ones I recommend.
Love it.
Nice.
I just lost my list. Some of the other ones that I had that I definitely loved, feel like I've for sure talked about on our like last holiday episode, was The Me You Love in the Dark, and The Autumnal, although in that one the changing leaves are spooky and that's sad because I love them, but then at the same time I'm like, ooh, they're spooky. what else? I read the first volume of Killadelphia. There's like vampires in Philadelphia, but it's kind of tied to like, I don't know, one of the first presidents of America, that all that American history that as Canadians we somehow magically know. Hero Country was one, but that one, I don't think I'm going to read more of that one because it was a little, I definitely talked about that on the holiday episode or the anniversary episode, I think. It's a little too back country, hick, weird, spooky, creepy. I don't like that. I don't like stuff where you'd all of a sudden feel like, you know, like Criminal Minds would roll in and they'd be like, oh, these people.
Yeah, no, it's like there's an episode of Supernatural, I think in the first or second season, where it ends up not being monsters or anything. It's just people.
Oh, yes.
And I was like, that's actually one of the creepier episodes of the entire series, because you're like, that could be real, though.
I like the Scooby-Doo episode.
I love the Scooby-Doo episode.
But yeah, there's definitely, I've read so many. So yeah, we love graphic novels. We love spooky. You were talking about some of your sort of audio stories and stuff that you're doing. Mike, why don't you tell us about some of what you have, projects you have coming up?
Okay, so first thing is I'm kind of taking the the Horror Mooners branding in a new direction. It pretty much, it's going to be a home base for horror related projects such as audio stories. I have a, my first release is a book, or is a audio, it's an audio book, but I call it an audio short. It's titled Hello God, It's Me, Sammy. And it's around, I think, 17 to 18 minutes. And it will be premiering on my YouTube channel October 26th. And just look up Horror Mooners or in Michael Story, search that on YouTube, and maybe subscribe to the channel or give me some likes and check it out. I also have a graphic novel that should be, I'll definitely be putting links up in the Horror Mooners social media. That should be coming out in the new year sometime, and we're about in the third quarter of it. It's Andrew Thomas is the letterer, and he's working on some Kevin Smith books, comic books right now. And it's written by the Rissman brothers, Cole and Ben. Two really talented guys. They've done some writing and directing for like music videos and other projects. They're based out of Hamilton, and they've just come up with this great story. It's not just, it's not pure horror. It's got horror elements, but it's got a bunch of neat stuff. So I'll definitely be posting that. I also have some artwork coming out in the instruction manual for a board game. Called EOS or EOS Rise, and there's a Kickstarter for that November 15th.
Ooh.
It's created by Jim Baker, and go and check that out. It looks like a really cool game, and I think most of all the artwork in the instruction manual is mine. So
cool. But, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's all I can think of right now.
Amazing.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I know. It's been a slow burn year, but it's like everything's going to be happening.
Everything all at once.
We'll have as much of that as we can linked in the show notes.
Absolutely.
And we actually have a little preview clip of your audio story right here.
His eyes slowly focus, starting with blackness, then a wavering in and out from a blue-gray blur. Realization, existence is colorless, sticky heat. Two dots, moving pinholes, they circle in the gray. Squinting eyes relax as a strong wind cools perspiration from hair and face. Second realization.
Seagulls?
Tension slams into the back of the stranger's eyeballs like an abrasive hand clap. His throat aches with a sensation of razor blades. The dryness is jolting.
Definitely looking forward to that. I may have had some editing on some of that story that you just heard a little clip of.
Jet's the editor, so I forgot to mention that. Did an awesome job.
Thank you. It's been really fun working on that and the other things that we have in the works as well, which we're going to work on this winter. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Winter projects. Love that. Yes.
But yeah, this has been awesome. We have been, you know, looking forward to this for months. I feel like it was last spring. I was like, we'll do a horror episode. And you were like, oh my God, I have to be on.
Well, what I really love about your podcast is that you take comics, you put them on the same level as books, because I know you're foremost more of a, I guess, a novel or a book podcast, but I really like how the both of you treat the genre with as much respect, because some people, it's that taboo attitude of, oh, it's comics, it's not real books, but it's a respected media that's like important to me, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And I love how you guys, you know, even I think at first you weren't going over as many like graphic novels or comic books, but when you started to, you just treated it with as much respect as the genre that you normally do, or brought that into that fold. So I think that was really neat. And thank you for having me on. It was an honor.
Awesome. Thank you for being here. It's been so great.
I just wanted to like quickly to tie into that. So Stephanie Cook, who we've done an episode with, and who you met at TCAF.
Yes.
She had actually just posted a video kind of about that whole, like, how it's a medium. So like all the genres mm-hmm. that you would read in, like, you know, like a classic novel, you can have all those genres in a comic mm-hmm. or a graphic novel. So it's, and it is, especially, like, I think, you know, the age that all of us are, we were taught that it was this, ooh, comics are just for kids or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, all the ones that I've been reading have not been for kids.
No. And from what I understand is the Western world's really the only one who's like, comics yeah. are for kids. Whereas you get, you know, countries like Japan, who it's like, they have comic books for, like, people who, for everybody, like how to yeah. knit, they have knitting comics and everything, like for everybody. That's yes. fun. They exist, I hear. Yes.
Yeah. I love that.
Awesome. And yeah, just, you know, that's the whole reason that we have this podcast, right? All the different interviews that we've done, all the different books that we've done. Mm-hmm. And I said this literally like every episode for the last 2 years, you know, I keep realizing that you can write however you want to write, whether it's for everyone who knows the drinking game, if it's like paper houses, this is where you take the drink. Or it's just those like little snippets of like sort of
yeah, like little vignettes.
Vignettes, or then short stories, or again, all those stories that I've been trying to write and then I'm like, it never works. It's because I'm seeing them visually because I've studied photography and film like my whole life. So as you mentioned, like how this something is killing the children is so cinematic. It's like, that's mm-hmm. how I see them. So it's just, every medium works because we're just trying to tell stories.
And I was going to say, I'm just obsessed with stories and I love seeing them being told in different ways. And I like looking at different mediums to see how certain stories are more suited to one type of medium than another, mm-hmm. or like how you can do something a little bit different with that medium. It's just, I don't know. It's just, it's all telling stories. It's all cool. You're just yeah. doing it in slightly different ways and taking advantage of that particular medium's strengths. So, yeah.
I like when mediums,
No, I was just going to say tell more stories.
I like when mediums cross over. I like when you can, mm-hmm. there's a story told the graphic novel, and then you can hop from a graphic novel to TV, then to book novelization, and they're all like in the same world. I like that intercrossing of different content in social media, if it's done well.
Well, that's even just, you know, like with the collection that we've been working on and then this audio story that, you know, that's going to be posted as, if you're listening to this, it's live, yay. You know, like it's, you do have the two different stories and like it's just kind of, lended itself, you know, the one that's audio lent itself that way. And
well, I have written a prequel, which is still in the works to this audio story. There's some visuals, but they're just pretty much still visuals. This is the content on YouTube will be just pretty much for audio, like an audio book, but the next one will be completely visual and I'll be taking it from a whole different storytelling aspect.
Yeah, but like it's still in the same universe, so it's just yay, we just love all this stuff. This is when then as you all know, once we like something, then we can just rant and rave for hours and hours.
Yeah, yeah. Just geek out on storytelling forever.
So yeah, all of Mike's stuff will be linked in the show notes. As always, anotherbookontheshelf.com. I have a list of a bunch of my favorite horror graphic novels, if you're still into spooky season, because we are going to ride that out until winter.
I've already said I'm extending spooky season through November because I've gotten basically no reading done in October. So I was like, nope, November is Halloween too.
Spooky season can be as long as you'd like it to be.
Yeah.
It's all year for me.
Yes.
Another book podcast on Instagram. Neither of us have really been showing our face lots, but we're still posting and sharing stuff all the time. So you always know where to find us, reach out to us, all the things. And we'll see you in 2 weeks for an episode that I totally know what it is.
God, what I think are
it's
we doing.
I think it's the book club episode. I think it's my book club.
Oh yes, right? That's correct. Yeah,
it's How I Killed Pluto and Why It Deserved It by Mike Brown. He is an astronomer who found a reason for Pluto to no longer be included as a planet in our solar system, and it's been amazing to read so far. And again, I just want to be an astronomer. So, you know, come back in 2 weeks and find out if Jet's changing careers.
Yeah, this time, yeah, the next one we'll be geeking out about space, which is another favorite topic of ours.
Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. But we will see you then.
Thanks so much, guys. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.